We're talking about goat herds dispatched to help control non-native plants and livestock land management. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So goats are effective at clearing brush and shrubs. There are grazing approaches that work with the natural tendencies of livestock. From buckthorn to multiflora rose, those stiff thorns, goats don't mind them. Are you a grazier? What kind of livestock do you have to help manage your land? Have you seen any goats nibbling shrubs on parkland? Did you stop to observe them? What questions do you have about using goats to control plants and wild landscapes? We're at 800-642-1234. Jacob Grace is a grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. Jacob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I was just doing a little primer here on perennial crops. Can you help us, you know, give us a working knowledge of what perennial crops are before we get into grazing and controlling them?
Yeah. So a perennial crop is a crop that, or really any plant that grows back year after year, as opposed to annual crops, which are most of us know them from the things we plant in our garden, where we plant them one year, they grow, they produce fruit or do something else we want them to do, and then they die and we have to plant them again next year. So a lot of the work that I do is with perennial crops, and specifically the main type of perennial crop that we have in Wisconsin is some type of forage. So that's plants that are planted so that animals can eat them. And that's probably our most common type of perennial plant on the landscape is grasses or other things that we raise for livestock to eat.
Why is grazing an important part of this management of the land here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so grazing goes back to before, you know, humans were here doing agriculture, and is something that wildlife or other large herbivores have done in many natural ecosystems. So it's an important part of these ecosystems that now, as we're trying to integrate our agricultural systems, as you mentioned from the name of the center that I work for, it's important to have grazers and other large animals in the mix on our farms to diversify our farms, help with nutrient cycling, improve our soil health, things like that.
And, you know, that might also cut down on the amount of chemicals that you use to control the plants and things that are just growing out of control.
That's right. So depending on the type of management that you use, you can have livestock like goats or like cattle or some other type of livestock, and you can use them to control what types of plants are growing. And to favor some plants over others, and especially if you have large shrubs or other plants that you would prefer not to have, then grazing can be a tool to help get rid of those plants.
And there are specific types of grazing. There's like stock grazing and rotational grazing. Can you tell us about those techniques?
Yeah, so there are a lot of different grazing methods. And I'm a grazing specialist, so I get to think about all the little details of that.
All day long, you can think about different types
exactly.
of grazing. I wonder, though, if you, like, actually eat while you're doing it. Never mind. Okay.
No. Just slowly, all day long.
Yeah.
That's right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So there are kind of two main types of grazing. And one of the main types is maybe the more traditional or more conventional approach, which is what is sometimes called set stock grazing or continuous grazing. And that's where you have a large area and you just take your livestock and you put them out there and you kind of leave them there. And they're in the same large area for a fairly long amount of time. And there are some pros to that, one being that it takes less of your time to have to move them around or do a lot of management. But one of the downsides of that is you don't have much control over what those livestock will be eating. So when you're doing continuous grazing, often the livestock will go around and just eat the plants that they really like or the plants that they really want to eat. And if they're in that space all the time, eventually there are going to be fewer and fewer of the plants that they really like and more of the plants that they don't like. And that can be a real challenge if you're the farmer who's, you know, trying to use this land, trying to raise your livestock. So one of the alternatives to that, and a lot of the work that I do, is looking at rotational grazing. And this is when we take that the same area, but rather than putting all the livestock in all of that area, it gets subdivided so that they'll be in a little bit smaller area for a shorter amount of time. And then they'll eat off what's in that area, and then they'll be moved or rotated to another small area within that larger area. And that does a couple of important things. So first of all, it forces the livestock to kind of eat more evenly, and not just eat the plants that they really like, or the ice cream plants, we kind of call them. So the things that, you know, they eat their dessert without eating their vegetables. So rotational grazing gives you a little bit more control over what those livestock are eating. And then the other important part is when you move them off an area, it gives that area a chance to rest and recover. And a lot of those good plants that you want have time to grow back. So for people that are using grazing to try to remove or reduce a certain type of plant, they're often using some type of rotational grazing because it gives them more control over what those livestock are eating.
We're talking with Jacob Grace, who is a grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. We're learning about grazing, using livestock to manage land. You can join in. What questions do you have about managed grazing or perennial agriculture? Which livestock do you employ to help manage your land and why? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jacob, when should farmers move their livestock to a new area? What type of indicators in the land do you look for?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and it's a really complicated question, as you can probably imagine. That's actually an important thing for farmers to develop over the years is some people will refer to it as having a grass eye, so just being able to almost have a sixth sense of, you know, when a pasture is looking like the cattle or other livestock need to be moved off of it. But there are a number of more concrete indicators that people can use. There are different ways to measure how much forage or how much grass is in your pasture. And when it gets down below a certain number, then that's kind of how you know when to move your livestock. Often people will use the height of the forage as a way to estimate when they need to move livestock. And it varies, but often around 4 inches is what people will use as an estimate of once their grass starts getting below 4 inches, that's a good time to move the livestock on to their next pasture. At that point, once it gets below that, if the livestock keep grazing, they'll be eating lower and lower on those plants. And so they're starting to hurt the ability of some of those plants to regrow. So a lot of the farmers I work with who do rotational grazing think of around 4 inches as a good height when they need to move their animals to their next pasture.
Jacob Grace is with us, a grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at UW-Madison. We're learning about grazing techniques in land management. And this is after reports this spring and summer that dozens of goats were dispatched to chomp on the overgrowth in Madison parks. What do you want to know about using goats or other livestock to control plant growth and vegetation? Have you seen this done in other places? What were the results? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Jacob Grace right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning about all facets of livestock grazing. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Madison parks have used goats in recent months to help control plants, shrubs, and weeds. They'll eagerly chomp away at buckthorn, honeysuckle, and poison ivy, What grazing strategies are effective to control plant vegetation? What questions do you have about using goats instead of chemical applications to reduce invasives? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Jacob Grace is a grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at UW-Madison, and he stays with us. Well, let's take a call. Brianne is joining us from Plover this morning. Hi, Brianne.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So my question is about goats and poison ivy, actually. We just bought a large amount of acreage, and a fair amount of it is really overrun with poison ivy and, I believe, poison oak. So we're trying to figure out if goats might be a good option for us, and any suggestions or ways to proceed along that front.
And, Brianne, I just want to be a little more specific here. You're looking at about 40 acres of land. Is that right?
That's right. I think that the poison ivy is more limited to about 20 acres of it, and obviously it's intermixed with all of the other vegetation in the area.
All right. Well, what would you suggest there, Jacob?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Poison ivy being another example of one of these plants we might want to get rid of with livestock. I think this gets a little bit into why goats specifically are being used in some of these parks, and why they're being chosen over other types of livestock. So goats in particular are browsers. So all of the different livestock that we raise have a little bit different diet. And kind of what makes goats stand out is that they're really browsers rather than grazers, which means they would rather eat leaves than eat grass. So that's part of why they work for these park settings, is you can put goats into an area and they'll go to the trees and shrubs and take all the leaves off of those trees and shrubs before they really start eating any of the grass or anything on the ground. Animals like cattle or horses are the complete opposite of that. If you put them into an area, they'll go and they'll eat all the grass, eat all the stuff on the ground. And then if they kind of have eaten most of that and are still hungry, then they might start looking at some of the leaves and thinking about whether they might want to try some of those. So I think that relates to the caller's question in that I'm not sure if goats would be as interested in poison ivy because it's more, I guess it depends if it's growing as a vine or growing more on the ground. I'm guessing that they would give it a try and kind of see what it's like for them. But I guess my gut feeling is that they might not be the best type of livestock for dealing with something like poison ivy.
What might be a better alternative to trying to reduce the amount of poison ivy or poison oak?
Yeah, I should say this is not something I know a whole lot about at this point, so I might be completely making things up here. But my instinct would be to go with something more like a flock of sheep. I know sheep often have a diet that's based a lot on broadleaves that grow on the ground. So sheep will eat some grass, they'll eat some leaves, but what they tend to go towards first is broadleaf plants that are growing on the ground. So they might be the best fit for something like poison ivy. But someone who actually raises goats or raises sheep would have a lot more information about that. So
Brianne, how does that sound? A flock of sheep, perhaps?
Sounds good to me.
Good luck.
Well, good luck to you, Brianne. Thanks so much for calling. Well, Jacob, what kind of predators do these grazers have to worry about with cattle in particular?
Yeah, so just as the different livestock have different diets, there are also different concerns with predators. And I think, well, I'll save that thought for now. One of the nice things about cattle, and one of the things that makes them easier to deal with in some ways for some of these issues, is that cattle don't have a lot of natural predators in Wisconsin right now. If you get up farther north in the state, you start to get into where, you know, there are wolves, and sometimes people have issues with wolves. But for the most part, in southern Wisconsin, other parts of the Midwest, cattle don't really have any current predators other than maybe a pack of stray dogs or something. So they're not as much of a concern for cattle. But for sheep and for goats, and really any smaller type of livestock than that, poultry or anything like that, predators are definitely a concern. And that can be dealt with trying to use your fencing to try to keep out predators, especially if you're using some type of electric fencing. But what a lot of people will do is use guard dogs, and that can be another good way to protect your herd, is to have this dog that just stays with them at all times, maybe multiple dogs that just live with the herd. And, you know, they say that a good guard dog just kind of thinks that it's actually a sheep, or you know, thinks it's part of the flock. And as one farmer has described them, he says, guard dogs are just sheep with teeth. So if anything threatens that flock, it'll get out and defend them.
Takes its job very seriously.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're talking with Jacob Grace, is a grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at UW-Madison. We're learning about livestock land management practices after goats were used to help control non-native plants growing in some Madison parklands this summer. You can join in with your questions about grazing. What types of strategies do you use? Do you set stock or rotational? What strategies have you found most effective? Join in at 800-642-1234. So, Jacob, Madison parks are using goats this summer to help get rid or reduce invasive plants, non-native plants. Why might goats be the right fit here?
Yeah. So as I was starting to say earlier, just because of their diet, goats are a pretty good fit for a job like this. And because goats are browsers and they tend to come in and first they'll eat the leaves off of trees or off of shrubs and then go down and maybe think about eating grasses or other things on the ground. Kind of getting back to some of that livestock management and the rotation, you can bring in a herd of goats to an area that has a lot of trees and shrubs. They'll go right for those trees and shrubs. You know, depending on how the trees and shrubs are growing, they can even climb up into them a little bit. Goats are very good climbers. So they really go after these shrubs aggressively. They'll eat off anything green that they can. And then for the person managing those goats, they just keep an eye on them. And as soon as those shrubs start to look like they've been pretty much eaten, before the goats start eating grasses or other things, they can move them on to the next section that needs to get browsed. So,
So that's goats, the way of really controlling them to make sure that they don't eat the things you want to keep the native species.
That's right. So that's one of the benefits of using goats, is they'll go right for those shrubs and pretty much leave the things on the ground alone unless they have gotten hungry and have eaten all the leaves.
Is it true that goat manure makes good fertilizer?
I think about any type of manure makes good fertilizer if you use it right. So I don't know a whole lot about that, but I wouldn't be surprised.
We had a caller who couldn't stay with us, wanted to know more about tall grass grazing. What can you tell us about, you know, goat grazing this in type of grass, you know, versus other livestock?
Yeah, I think if the goal was to deal with tall grasses, I think you'd want to choose a different type of livestock. As we've kind of been talking about, the goats will gravitate towards the trees and shrubs. But if you're trying to reduce your grasses, especially tall grasses, I think cattle would be a pretty natural fit. I realize that depending on the situation, that might be a little too complicated or a little bit too much work. But cattle and horses are very much grazers. They'll go right for the grasses. They'll eat some of those grasses. I guess I might mention, if this person is dealing with taller grasses, one of the things that people can do sometimes to kind of improve the grazing is, the taller that grass gets, the less desirable it is to some of these grazers, because it gets, you know, tall and hard, and a lot of the good nutrients that are in it when it's young and green are not there as much anymore. So what some farmers will do is, if they have grass that has gotten too tall, is they can go in and mow it. And sometimes when that grass is cut down and lying on the ground, the cattle are then able to graze it or eat it a little bit more easily. And if they're not, if they're tired of it at that point, then that grass can just kind of get recycled or composted back into the pasture and hopefully build up that soil health so there'll be more forage another time.
We are learning about livestock grazing as a land management tool in the toolbox with UW-Madison grazing specialist Jacob Grace. Do you know of areas where goats could help change the landscape and help diminish competition from native plants? What do you want to know about the care of goats as they work the land? Join in with your livestock management questions about grazing. We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're learning about goats used to clear away problematic plants in residential and public areas and how livestock are used as a way to manage plant growth. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So the goats will eat a noxious weed called buckthorn. They're being used as the natural solution to managing unwanted plants. What do you want to learn about livestock for weed control? The city of Hudson passed an ordinance a few years ago to allow residents to temporarily keep goats for controlling invasive plants. Is your community considering such an ordinance? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jacob Grace is a grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, and he's our guide. Let's take another call now. Christina is joining us from Glenwood this morning. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. Well, my brother raises goats in Missouri, and they are very smart and mischievous, often getting out and climbing on his vehicles.
That sounds about right.
I love them already. All right.
Can you describe the type of portable fencing that you use to control them, or to contain them, rather? And then also, would goats control burdocks?
Okay. Maybe I'll start with the burdock question because the short answer is I don't know, but I think it would be worth a try. The longer answer for the type of fencing to use for goats is I believe what most people are using in these park settings, in these more public settings, is some type of electric fencing that's a net. So it's not just a single line or a few lines, but it's kind of, if you picture it, it's like a series of squares, looks kind of like a checkerboard turned into an electric fence that then you can put on some temporary posts and you can kind of wrap it around the area that you want to graze. And so it's pretty lightweight, it's pretty mobile, and it's hopefully enough of a barrier to keep the goats in. You're definitely right that goats are known for being able to get out of fences and get out of things if they have enough time to kind of mess around with it. And as I had mentioned earlier, goats are often very good climbers. So that can be another challenge to trying to keep them into a fence. But that's also another reason that a lot of people are using electric fencing is because if you have a non-electrified fence and goats have plenty of time to kind of work with it and figure out its weak points, they can often find a way through. But with an electric fence, it's a physical barrier, but it's also a mental barrier. If an animal or a person like me, I've been electrocuted accidentally several times by electric fences.
Oh dear.
If you get a shock from it, it doesn't really hurt. It's more of just a really big surprise that, a shock is a good word for it. It's kind of both physically and mentally a shock that for a second you don't know what happened. And, of course, we can figure out exactly what happened and why it happened. But for animals, I think it kind of stays a little bit more of a mystery that they know it had to do with them, you know, pressing up against the fence or trying to get out or whatever. But, it kind of trains them in a way to know that, you know, when we see that fence there and we see those posts and we see that netting, we know to just not even get too close to that because strange things happen when we get too close to that. So I believe what most people are using is this portable electric fencing that's kind of more of a netting than the single lines.
Christina, good luck with that. And I want to tell you that you just talked with Courtney, the producer, and Courtney found that last year Lawrence University used goats on their campus to eat unwanted thistle and burdock weeds. So maybe have a lead there. Well, best of luck to you. Thanks for calling. I wonder, Jacob, you know, when we see those goats climbing, do they ever get stuck in a tree?
You know, that's a good question. I have to say I don't have as much goat experience as I would like to have. So I'm sure that's happened to somebody or to some goat over the years. But, you know, I think for the most part, they're very agile and very much able to kind of get themselves out of the situations they get into.
Other livestock and not using electric fencing, what are your options for other livestock and trying to contain them?
Yeah, so for larger livestock like cattle, you can use simpler electric fences, just a single strand or maybe a couple strands, depending on what the situation is, but other types of fencing you can use would be barbed wire fencing, or you can use woven wire fencing, which is, again, kind of more of the checkerboard pattern where it's really just not leaving room where any animal could squeeze out or find a way out. So there are a number of different options for fencing, but I think it's worth remembering for goats in particular, if you have an animal that really wants to get out for whatever reason, and farmers can think of plenty of reasons why, if there's an animal that really wants to get out, it can usually find a way. Mm-hmm. The fence might not survive, but if you have a cow that's been separated from her calf, or if you have a bull that is right near a herd of cows, if you have some livestock that really want to get someplace, you're going to either need a really strong fence to keep them in, or, you know, you might just need to resolve the bigger problem that's making them get out.
Mother Nature's determination there. Jacob Grace is with us, grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. We're exploring livestock land management practices and grazing techniques, especially with goats. You can join in with your questions, your experiences as well, 800-642-1234. Jacob, you also work with the DNR, which manages land across the state. What grazing strategies does the DNR use?
Yeah, so the DNR is dealing with similar issues with some of these invasive shrubs and invasive plants, but as you might imagine, dealing with it on a much larger scale in a lot of cases. So the DNR manages a lot of land throughout the state, and a good portion of that is grassland. And their task is to maintain those grasslands for good wildlife habitat, and also, you know, as a good place to do hunting or bird watching or other types of recreation. And one of their biggest challenges for maintaining these grassland habitats is these woody shrubs coming in and turning it from a grassland into, you know, the early stages of a forest. But, you know, a forest made up of mostly unwanted or, you know, invasive plants. So one of the things that they've been working on, and this has been a part of my work with the university, is looking into the possibilities of using livestock to control some of those invasive plants. This is a project that's now underway at a number of different DNR grasslands throughout the state where they're working, as far as I know, entirely with cattle. I don't believe they're doing anything with goats, but trying to see if cattle can be used to reduce some of those shrubs. as we've been talking about, goats are great for removing shrubs, but for some of the other things we've been talking about relating to concerns with predators, issues with, you know, goats trying to get out, or also just the difficulties of finding large numbers of goats that would be needed for a project of this scale. The DNR has been concentrating more on trying to use cattle just because mm-hmm. we have a lot more of them. They can hopefully, you know, they're looking for solutions that can be applied broadly and can be applied to large numbers of acres. So yeah, that's kind of
what kind yeah. of ratios yeah. do you look at of cattle to grazing land?
Yeah, it's, again, it depends on what type of,
terrain,
what type
you
of grazing, you're, uh-huh. yeah, what type of terrain, what type of grazing you're doing. So in a lot of these grazing sites, that the DNR is managing, they're specifically trying to understock them, would be the term, so that the cattle are definitely not, you know, they're erring on the side of not having enough cattle to hopefully prevent the cattle doing any other damage to the habitat. One of the things we found from our research is that can be an issue because to really start getting rid of some of these invasive plants, you do need quite a bit of grazing pressure to start getting rid of some of these shrubs. So that's another thing kind of along with, you know, knowing when to move your livestock, knowing how much area they need is something that, that a farmer really just kind of needs to develop an eye for over, you know, having done it for a while. And, I'm still working on mine.
We've talked about sheep and goats and cattle. Are there other type of grazers that we should be aware of?
I think in Wisconsin, those are probably the main ones. I'm trying to think.
There's nothing creative yeah. outside the box.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Yeah, it's.
Well, there are horses yeah. too. I mean, we can't right. leave out the horses. Yeah. I mean, they're gorgeous.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. We can think about horses, and then, you know, there are lots of other types of livestock that are less common, but have their own uses. So I know people use llamas as guard animals. Sometimes people are finding new and unique cattle breeds. One of the cattle breeds that we're using for the work with the DNR is the Scottish Highland cattle, which are they're kind of smaller cattle that have the long horns and the yeah. hair down in their eyes, kind of like it's the Justin Bieber hairdo.
nice description. Now,
and they're actually, they're similar to goats in that they do like to browse quite a bit. So they can be a good fit for some of that removal as well.
UW-Madison grazing specialist Jacob Grace is our guide. Still time for your questions on how to manage the landscape. What questions do you have about grazing or perennial agriculture? Do you produce crops or work with the land? What types of grazing strategies do you use? It's 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Should we rely on animals to keep non-native plants in check? It's a question we've been exploring this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Jacob Grace. He's a UW-Madison grazing and perennial agriculture specialist. Jacob, can you safely use livestock and also be using pesticides, herbicides to control invasive species, invasive plants?
Yeah. So that's a good question. And to kind of get into it, I wanted to do a quick follow-up to one of the questions from a caller, the woman asking about poison ivy for grazing. And I did a quick little search about that. And there does seem to be a little bit of concern that that can have an allergic reaction for sheep and for cattle in some cases. So I think I had said something about maybe sheep would be a good fit for that. So I just want to mention that that maybe that's not
maybe
such
stick
a good
to the
idea.
Goats.
Maybe stick to the goats. Goats seem to do okay with poison ivy. One of the other possibilities for poison ivy is that it doesn't do well with repeated mowing or clipping. So if there's a possibility of getting in there with a mower or a tractor with a larger mower, and mow that a few times, that could be one way to hopefully reduce the poison ivy a little bit. But I think this is kind of getting at the question you just asked a little bit, which is what are maybe some of the negative impacts for these livestock that are trying to do brush removal or weed removal, whether it's the plants themselves or if you're also combining it with using an herbicide. And that can be a concern. A lot of these invasive or unwanted plants have certain compounds that might not be great for these livestock. But I mean, really, that's true for a lot of, you know, for some foods we eat too, where, you know, if we eat a little bit of it, it's fine, but we don't want to just keep eating it and eating it and eating it. So a lot of these animals can break down and deal with some of those compounds. Goats are very good at that with a lot of these invasive plants. And I think in general, unless they're really hungry, these livestock will not just keep eating and eating a plant that's making them sick. So I think that's another thing that that the farmer or the herd manager will need to keep their eye on in these cases is to make sure that the goats or whatever livestock they are have a selection of different things to eat, so that if there is something that's, you know, starting to bother their stomach a little bit, they can move on to something else. And usually that's not much of an issue unless it's a case where you put hungry animals in a place where there's just a whole bunch of one plant that has some compounds that can make them start feeling sick. So that's another thing for people to be keeping an eye on as they're trying to use livestock for shrub or weed management.
Let's take a quick call here. Dave in North Freedom. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question. I've got some land and managed forest land, and one of the stipulations within it, and I looked into this pretty extensively, is you're not allowed to have any grazers. And even though that's a state program, and there's a state program to actually use grazers, you can't do it. And I'm wondering if you guys are kind of working on trying to get that so that people can use it in woods to, like, control, buckthorn and ironwood.
Dave, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for that question. And there's a lot I don't know about managed forest law, but I know that it gets really complicated really fast. And I'll say one thing we are working on, I'll try to be brief, is, you know, there's a long history in Wisconsin and other states of discouraging people from having livestock in their woods or in their timber. And there are good reasons for that. There's been historically a lot of damage done to these woods and especially to their soils from having unmanaged grazing of whether it's cattle or hogs or other livestock back in these woods where they've been doing quite a bit of damage. But at the same time, there are ways of doing grazing in the woods or even in what are called silvopasture systems, where you have livestock and forages in a pasture, but then also have trees growing there. And there are a lot of possibilities for expanding and improving that. And that is something we're working on, is trying to address kind of this historic idea that we shouldn't be having livestock in the timber under any conditions, and working on saying, you know, that can be done badly, but there are ways that it can be done well, especially if, you know, it's targeted to remove some type of invasive shrub.
Jacob, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. It's been fun.
Jacob Grace is a grazing and perennial agriculture specialist at the UW-Madison Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. The coronavirus has moved across Wisconsin communities, first hitting urban areas in March and then working its way across the state. Now the pandemic has reached places where residents didn't think they had to worry as much, like suburban Waukesha County. Corrine Hess reports cases there have increased rapidly since early July.
Judy Redding has been a clerk at Discount Liquor for nearly 30 years. Redding says the normally busy store has been packed since the pandemic began 5 months ago. Over the last few weeks, more of her customers started wearing masks. She sees this as a sign of respect as the number of coronavirus cases continue to increase in Waukesha County.
I'm not going to stop wearing a mask until numbers go down. It's not a hoax. I know customers that come in here that are like emergency doctors, and they said people better start taking this serious.
New York Times data shows in the last week, Waukesha County has shown some of the fastest growth in new daily cases per capita. On Monday, Waukesha County had 3,663 cases and 55 deaths. Dr. Ben Weston is an associate professor of emergency medicine at the Medical College of Wisconsin. He says Waukesha County is seeing more cases, but more telling is the number of tests coming back positive.
They've had days where they're over 16% positive. Now, it is a little harder to tease out without knowing how much testing is going on those days. But nonetheless, 16% positive is... it's concerning.
By comparison, the state average is 9.6% positive. Weston says the numbers in Waukesha County are especially alarming, considering how they have changed since the pandemic has started. He says what's happening in Waukesha County mirrors what's happening nationally.
Places that opened up a little bit sooner, places that are more aggressive about getting back to life as normal, oftentimes, unfortunately, are hit the hardest.
Weston praised Governor Tony Evers' statewide mask mandate that went into effect Saturday, requiring everyone over the age of 5 to wear a mask indoors. But State Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and other Republicans opposed the mandate, arguing local officials should make the decision. During an interview Thursday, before the mask mandate was issued, Waukesha's Republican County Executive Paul Farrell raised concerns about the enforcement.
We have to be mindful of our physical separation, that 6 feet of distancing, the social distancing that we've talked about. And if you can't be socially distanced, then you should consider wearing a mask.
Farrell later issued a statement saying many Waukesha County residents are concerned the mandate infringes on their personal freedoms. Waukesha County Sheriff joined others, saying it would not enforce the mask mandate. But the rise in cases have friends like Tim Inda and Daniel Kaur thinking about how to remain safe. The two meet daily along Waukesha's Fox River. They don't wear masks when they meet, but they say they do when they go other places. Kaur says they trust each other, too.
I expect that he respects his life and doesn't go out gallivanting with no mask on. I mean, he's more intelligent than that. We have families that we love, too.
Diners outside of Taylor's People's Park were largely without masks, except for Andy and Brianna Wagner. They say they wear them for peace of mind.
It seems like it goes in waves, where you see a lot of people with masks and then not a lot of people with masks. And even when you go from county to county, it seems to differ a little bit.
At Discount Liquor, the manager hopes the statewide order will level the playing field. He hopes it makes employees like Redding feel safe coming to work and his community stay healthy. Corrine Hess, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And this is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.